Okay, so modular symbols today on April 19th, 2006. All right, so let's get started. Any questions before I start? No? Okay. Some announcements. If you go to the website for this course, at the very bottom, there's a new link to an article by Sarah that's very relevant to our discussion about level one modular forms that Ralph Greenberg found. And it has, I guess it's an English translation of a paper Sarah wrote, and it's supposed to be very beautiful, so he highly recommends it. So that's one announcement. Another announcement is that there's a talk next week. Can you just say something about that?
Oh, well, it's an opportunity seminar.
On Monday?
On Monday, maybe 4:30.
Okay, and I'll remind you in class on Monday about this.
Right, so
very nice talk.
I'm going to talk about L functions for things like elliptic curves and the building velocities. And what we call the root number.
I haven't talked about that.
About the sign of the functional equation.
I haven't talked about that.
Plus one and minus one.
So there'll be a talk next Monday, which I'll remind you about. Another thing is I've been updating the MSRI Computing with Modular Forms Summer Workshop website, and that workshop is going to have getting students to solve a bunch of unsolved, but not necessarily too hard problems or computational challenges. And I've already listed a number of computational challenges there, but if anybody here wants to look at those, they might find it interesting, especially if you're going to the workshop, because you might start early on one of the computational challenges. And you can find the website for the workshop just by going to my website and clicking on schedule, and then just, July, August, click on the link there for the MSRI workshop. Okay, so that's all that. And now on to modular symbols. So last time we talked about the homology group H1 X0 and Z, and if I assume that you didn't know any algebraic topology, I really basically had some trouble defining this for you. But if you do, then you already know what this is. And today I'll tell you about some similar objects that are much more concrete and really give you exactly the same thing. So they're called modular symbols. And there's something that were originally introduced by Brian Birch of the Birch and Sorensen Bayer conjecture of Oxford. He's now a retired professor from Oxford. His 75th birthday is coming up, by the way. So he's about 75 years old. But he'll have a 75th birthday conference in September that I'm going to talk at. Okay, so he introduced modular symbols, and he introduced them in connection with the Birch and Sorensen Dyer conjecture. He wanted to do calculations to figure out what the correct conjecture should be, and moreover, whether or not it's a reasonable thing to conjecture. And he did a lot of computations using these things. So I'm just going to tell you what they are. Basically, in one sentence, what they give you is a simple presentation for H1, X0, and Z. That's particularly good for understanding L functions and modular forms, but we'll just start with this. All right, so now without further ado, here's what a modular symbol is. It's a linear combination of pairs, alpha, beta, where alpha and beta are elements of P1 of Q, modular symbol is a formal linear combination of these things. Despite the notation with braces, which suggests a set, this is not at all a set. Just think of it as an ordered pair, alpha, beta. Ordered pair. It's just this is a notation that's historically used, and I'm not going to change it. This is what's used. But just think of this as being an ordered pair. So that's what a modular symbol is. It's just a formal linear combination of these. And there are, in fact, certain relations that they satisfy, which are very natural. And here's what they are. This is part of the definition. The modular symbols are formal linear combinations of pairs alpha beta subject to the following relations. Alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha is equal to zero. And there should be no torsion. So no torsion. That is to say, n times a modular symbol is zero implies the modular symbol is zero. So no torsion. So any, there are some relations that force there to be no torsion. So why is this a natural sort of thing to have? Well, here's how you think about modular symbols geometrically. Consider the upper half plane. This is the real axis here. And on the real axis, you have all these rational numbers. I won't draw every single one, but you have a huge number. And then you have the imaginary axis. And a modular symbol, well, it's just a formal linear combination of things given by a pair of, an ordered pair of elements of P1 of Q. That is an ordered pair of these yellow dots. So for example, it could be, this is alpha, and that's beta, and then the modular symbol, should think of it as being a path that goes straight up here and goes along, doesn't really matter how it goes along, and then it lands at beta. So it starts at alpha and it goes to beta. And this relation, alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha, is simply the homology relation that you would have if you were to consider these as relative homology classes, the paths as relative homology classes relative to the cusps. Well, this alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha, that one cycle bounds a two cycle. It bounds this. And therefore, it's zero as that sum of three things is zero in homology. So that's why this is a natural relation. It just says that alpha beta plus beta gamma is the same as alpha gamma. That's another way to think about it. So, I mean, just, there's another relation which follows, it's implied by this, and it's that alpha beta is equal to negative beta alpha. And the reason for that is just take alpha beta plus beta alpha plus alpha alpha. And, first take alpha beta and gamma all equal to each other. Then you have alpha alpha plus alpha alpha plus alpha alpha equals zero. But modular symbols are torsion free. So that the fact that three alpha alpha is zero tells you that alpha alpha is zero. So alpha alpha should be zero because by definition there's no torsion. And the alpha beta is minus beta alpha. Well, take gamma equal to alpha, then you have alpha beta plus beta alpha plus zero is equal to zero, and therefore alpha beta is equal to minus beta alpha. So these are really the relations you have, and then they imply some other things. So for example, this alpha beta is minus beta alpha just means that the symbol going from alpha to beta, the path going from alpha to beta, is the negative of the path going from beta to alpha, etc. So basically, modular symbols are a way of systematically writing down a bunch of relative homology classes for the upper half plane, for the homology that are elements of the homology of the upper half plane, and just observing that they would have these, or that they have these relations. But you can forget about all of this upper half plane homology stuff and simply consider formal pairs of rational numbers subject to these relations. And the resulting object that you get is a torsion-free abelian group, which I'll denote by M2, the funny-looking M for modular symbols, and the 2, because these are in fact weight 2 modular symbols. There's a notion of modular symbols of any integer weight greater than or equal to 2, and I'll talk about more general modular symbols later. These are weight 2 modular symbols. And if you forget about the homology and just do this completely formally, it's simply, by definition, the free abelian group on all pairs alpha beta modulo the three-term relations alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha equals 0. So I'll just leave it like that. The subgroup generated by all of these, the additive subgroup generated by all of these, and then modulo any torsion. By that I mean, we said it's the biggest quotient that has no torsion. Okay, any questions about the definition of M2? Notice that gamma 0 of n has nothing to do with this yet. This is just some formal construction. This is a huge group. It's infinitely generated. It's not something you can really get your hands on except if you choose specific alpha and beta or any finite number of them, you can sort of write, you could kind of work with this, but it could be tricky. This isn't the object we're directly with, but this is the space sort of modular symbols before you choose a specific level. So I haven't related it to x0 of n or even involved n in the definition at all. That's the next thing I'll do. Okay, so in order to involve gamma 0 of n in the definition of modular symbols, I'll define an action of gamma 0 of n on this abelian group, M2. Okay? Is anybody puzzled or confused? Is anybody on the edge of their seat? You sort of are. Okay, so here's how you can involve, how you can get something that's related to H1 x0 of n. So define an action of, well, first, GL2Q acts on M2. And it's really, there's no mystery here. If you have a gamma in there, you just let gamma act on alpha beta on that modular symbol by gamma alpha, gamma beta. Where here, this is the action of the linear fractional transformation corresponding to gamma in GL2Q. So you have a pretty simple left action of GL2 on there. So this really has an algebra combinatorial feel to it. Just define an abelian group, and I've given a way to make this group act on it. Now here's what you can do. Define M2 gamma 0 of n. You don't consider the modular symbols that are fixed under GL2. Under gamma 0 of n. That would be kind of like what we did with modular forms. We considered the functions on the upper half plane that were fixed under the action of gamma 0 of n. Here instead, we'll consider the biggest quotient, since somehow modular symbols are like homology, and homology is dual to modular forms. So we'll consider the biggest quotient that is fixed under the action of gamma 0 of n. And by the way, you extend this action linearly. I should have said that.
Extend linearly.
So here, I've totally given this definition correctly. So it makes sense. So M2 gamma 0 of n. By definition, you take M2 and you quotient out by all elements of this free, or this, not free, but this abelian group, gamma x minus x, all elements of this form. And you also, for our purposes today, at least, quotient out by any torsion. Though it can, in fact, be interesting to not for that.
All those gamma orient, gamma 0.
Yes, sorry, let me make that clear. Modulo any torsion. Now, this looks pretty algebraic, but it doesn't look computable at all. This M2 is huge. It's, I mean, you're taking, you start with an abelian group on a lot of different alpha betas, infinitely many different alpha betas. You quotient out by something else. The resulting quotient is of, it's not a finite rank abelian group. You take that and you quotient out by some more stuff, infinitely many things again, and you get something. And it does turn out that this is of finite rank, but it's not at all clear that you could compute this in any meaningful sense. For example, how would you get a list of specific modular symbols that generate this space? Is there a simple way to do that? The answer is yes, there is. And there's also a simple way of writing down all relations. There's a way to write down a specific subset of elements of M2 and specific relations that they satisfy, such that the quotient of the free abelian group on that subset, modulo the given explicit list of relations, is isomorphic to this. And that's something that Manin figured out how to do in the early 1970s, before, quite a long time ago. And that's what I'm going to tell you about right now. But just so you know what's going on without knowing the theorems, I mean without knowing the proofs yet, a theorem of Manin, it may have been proved by Birch also, but Manin published a complete proof in, with all the details, so I'll attribute it to him. But M2, gamma 0 of n, is canonically isomorphic to H1, X0 of n, Z, but relative to the cusps. So this is just the same as the usual homology, but instead of considering only closed paths, you consider paths where the endpoints are cusps in X0 of n. So you have your modular curve X0 of n, which you're thinking of, say, as a topological space, which is all that homology really tells you about. And here you have a couple of points that you added in to compactify it, the cusps. And now you consider, instead of only considering loops on here, you allow, of course, the loops, but you also allow paths that go from one, and maybe in a complicated way, they go from one cusp to another cusp. And that's what this means, the homology relative to the cusps. So it's actually a little bit bigger than H1 X0 of NZ. It contains within it H1 X0 of NZ as a subgroup, since you can just take the usual, just the paths between loops, and there are no extra relations. So it contains within it that. And there's a simple description of a subspace of cuspidal modular symbols that exactly matches up with the integral homology. This subspace of cuspidal modular symbols, I'll define it for you right now. So here's what you do. In the notes, this is right in the middle of page 44. So define a map delta from M2, gamma 0 of n, to space B2, gamma 0 of n. This B2 is really easy. It's simply the free abelian group on the cusps. So this is the free abelian group on the cusps. So I don't know how to write that. But the cusps for gamma 0 of n, so there are only finitely many. So I'll just write a class of alpha in gamma 0 of n orbits for P1 and Q. Z alpha. Okay, so you consider the free abelian group on the finitely many cusps for gamma 0 of n. And then you define a map from M2 to there. We'll call it delta. And it just it's a very simple map. Delta sends alpha beta to beta minus alpha. And notice, for example, that if alpha and beta were If you view this path in the upper half plane from alpha to beta, consider its image in the curve x naught of n. This curve, after all, is constructed as a quotient of the upper half plane by the action of gamma 0 of n. And these relations that we impose to define m2 gamma 0 of n are really exactly the homology, the additional relations that we have in going from the upper half plane to your curve. If alpha and beta happen to be, say, to map to the same cusp down here, then you would just get a closed loop. So that's just an example of how this somehow captures integral homology. More generally, if you have some formal linear combination of pairs alpha beta, remember m2 gamma 0 n is not just the pairs alpha beta, it's the free abelian group on the pairs alpha beta modulo a whole bunch of relations. So its elements, you can represent them as, or think of them as, formal linear combinations of these. And this map you should extend linearly. But if you had something like, if you had some big sum of these, and somehow when you map over all the endpoints sort of cancel out, then you end up getting something that's equivalent to a closed path. And that's exactly what this homology is. It's all the closed paths modulo the homology relations. S2 gamma 0 of n, finally, is simply the kernel of delta. So this is, by definition, per delta. And the theorem of Manin, again, is that, or one theorem of Manin, is that S2 gamma 0 of n is isomorphic to H1 x0 of nz, and m2 gamma 0 of n is the slightly bigger group, H1 x0 of nz, relative to the cusps. So that's the first two pages. Here's an example, just to give you some practice thinking about modular symbols. Consider the modular symbol 0, 1. It's an element of, let's view it as an element of m2 gamma 0 of n, very specific n. Then it turns out it's 0. No matter what n is, that particular modular symbol is 0. And here's why. So it's not 0, I think it's not 0 in m2, but it is 0 in m2 gamma 0 for any n. So here's why. If you let gamma be the matrix 1, 1, 0, 1, which we actually call T frequently, this is an element of gamma 0 of n. And notice that the modular symbol infinity 0 is equal to gamma infinity gamma 0. That's just because we're working in the quotient of m2 modulo these relations. One thing you have to watch out for is there's a little bit of abusive notation. There's nothing in the notation for this modular symbol that specifically tells you that I'm talking about it as an element of m2 gamma 0 of n. The notation for a modular symbol in here is identical to the notation for a modular symbol in just m2, or for any n. You don't actually put some extra notation in to indicate the n where you're considering the modular symbol. It's sort of like identifying an element with its image in a quotient, and that's just what's done. But it doesn't cause confusion. If it does, you can put a subscript, say, specifically emphasizing where that modular symbol is an element. So you have this equality. That's an infinity there. So infinity 0 is the same as gamma 0, gamma of infinity. That's again because modular symbols, they're elements of this quotient. This is supposed to be 0 because we're quotienting out. So any element of gamma 0 of n acts as the identity on modular symbols for gamma 0 of n. And the definition of the action is like this. Now, just work out what this says. What is gamma of infinity? Well, you're acting via linear fractional transformations. And this sends infinity to, z plus 1 over z. So infinity goes to 1, to the right, goes to 1, because you send, let z go to infinity, and this goes to 1 over 0.
Isn't the action z plus 1 over 1?
z plus 1, oh, you're right, z plus 1 over, whoops. Z plus 1 over 1, and then infinity goes to infinity plus 1, which is infinity. And 0 goes to 1. Okay, so this is a relation that holds for any n. For any n, you have infinity 0 is equal to infinity 1. But now, if infinity 0 is equal to infinity 1, just do a little calculation and see if the claim I made is true. So, in particular, one way to do it would be to look at the difference, infinity 1 minus infinity 0, that's equal to 0, since you're taking the difference of two things that are equal, but then just switch the order, so it's the same as infinity 1 plus 0 infinity, and that's the same as 0 comma 1. So this step uses that alpha beta is the same as minus negative minus beta alpha. And the next step uses that, well, you just reverse the order, and you use that alpha beta plus beta gamma is equal to alpha gamma, which was something you get from the three-term relation. So 0, 1 is equal to 0, and so that's something that you have for any n. One of the homework problems is to show that for any integers n and n prime, the modular symbol from n to n prime is equal to 0 in M2 gamma 0 of n. That's just an example to get you familiar with working with modular symbols. Yes?
Why is the first one true? Infinity 0 is equal to gamma infinity.
This one?
Yeah.
Because we're working in, so M2 gamma 0 of n is the quotient of M2 by all of these relations.
Oh, I see.
And in other words, M2 gamma 0 of n is the quotient of M2, okay, where gamma 0 of n acts as the identity.
Okay.
And this is how gamma 0 of n also acts. So another way to write it would be infinity 0 is equal to gamma infinity 0 for any gamma and gamma 0 of n, in particular for this choice. Then you get to that. All right, so now I'm going to explain how or why it's possible to compute M2 gamma 0 of n. Why is there a nice finite representation? And I'll prove it. I'll prove that there's a finite representation. I won't give a complete proof that the that a certain explicit choice of finite representation is correct. But I will prove that there exists one. So this is this Lenin's trick. And in order to explain this trick that allows you to see that M2 gamma 0 of n has a finite representation, we need to introduce Lenin symbols and tell you a bit more about gamma 0 of n. So first remember that SL2Z has, or the gamma 0 of n is a finite index subgroup of SL2Z. So SL2Z is a disjoint union of finitely many cosets. I'll use right cosets. R0, disjoint union, the strength union R sub M. So this just is the fact that gamma 0 of n has finite index in there. And the nice thing is you can explicitly describe these R0 through Rm, or these cosets, as follows. So there's a bijection between the cosets of the bijection between the cosets of gamma 0 of n and SL2Z and the elements of P1 of Z mod nZ. So let's write this. Gamma 0 of n. So these coset, this set of cosets is in one-to-one bijection with the elements of P1, Z mod, and Z. And the bijection sends a coset, gamma 0 of n, are, well, I'll let the representative be explicitly given as, let's see, A, B, C, D. This corresponds to C colon D in P1 and Z mod and Z. P1 and Z mod and Z is what you get if you take, is by definition the collection of pairs of integers C comma D, where C and D are integers modulo N, and the ideal they generate in Z mod N Z is the unit ideal. Or if you like, if you lift them to rational integers, then the ideal generated by C, D, and capital N is the unit ideal. That is to say, there's no common factor shared by all three numbers. So that's all. It's that modulus scalar relations. So it's the U, V with U, V, and Z mod N, Z, and the GCD of U, Z, and N, equal to 1, modulus scalars. So modulus Z mod N, Z star. Where Z mod and Z star acts by rescaling. So you have this explicit one-to-one correspondence. So you can explicitly describe cosets of S of gamma 0 of n and SL2Z by giving pairs of integers modulo n, which is kind of nice, up to this rescaling. And the surprising thing, perhaps, is that you also get modular symbols from each element of P1 and Z mod NZ. So given a U comma V, or maybe U colon V would be better, in P1 of Z mod NZ, well, I'll actually use U comma V. There's a modular symbol, which I'll denote by square brackets U comma V prime. The prime will cease to be so important in a minute, but it is certainly, actually, no, sorry, leave off the prime for now. I'll have a prime in a minute. So just square brackets UV, and this is a specific modular symbol. So it's an element of M2 gamma 0 of N. And what is it? Well, UV, it's the lower two entries of a matrix, A, B, C, D. Modulo n. So there exists a matrix A, B, C, D with C, comma D congruent mod n to U, comma V. And you just choose such a matrix, let's call it gamma. And then you let this notation square brackets UV mean gamma of the modular symbol 0 infinity. Okay? So what have I done? One, I've stated that there's a bijection between P1 of Z mod NZ and the right cosets of gamma 0 of N and SL2Z. This is a homework problem. And two, I've given you a way of going from elements of P1 of Z mod NZ to modular symbols. Given an element of P1 of Z mod NZ, you get a modular symbol. Now the interesting thing is that these symbols generate all of M2 gamma 0 of N. If you take just the symbols of the special form UV, or gamma 0 infinity, as you run over a list of right coset representatives, then you get a collection that generates M2 gamma 0 of N over Z. Okay? And I'll prove that to you right now. By the way, choosing your right coset representative doesn't make any difference here, because these symbols are only, they're invariant under multiplication on the left by an element of gamma 0 of n. And that's the only choice you have in making a different choice of right coset representative. So here it doesn't matter at all what right COSA representative you choose, gamma, that you get by lifting UV. So in this bijection, there's really no question of well-definedness of this map from P1 of Z mod NZ to M2. Yeah, zero of N. Okay, so now the important thing, which I'll completely prove to you right now, is the following. So, what do I call it in here? The proposition 332 the modular symbols square brackets UV for UV running through the elements of P1 of Z mod NZ generate M2 gamma 0 of M. Okay, before proceeding further, let me just emphasize that we're really building something that's an extremely easy to compute device here, because you can really easily list all the elements of P1 of Z mod NZ, especially say if N is prime. Then it's just list the numbers from 0 up to P minus 1, and then one extra thing. It's very easy to list the elements of this set. And I'm telling you that if you consider for each one of these a certain modular symbol, together they all generate M2 gamma 0 of N. So if you can figure out what the relations are between them, and in fact you can, then you just take the free abelian group on the elements of P1 of Z mod NZ, modulo a couple of completely explicit relations, and that very, very simple explicit object is isomorphic to M2 gamma 0 of N. And M2 gamma 0 of N itself is isomorphic to the relative homology, I erased that, but it was here, of H1 X0 of NZ relative to the cusps. And H1 X0 of NZ, without being relative to the cusps, so if you just take the subpiece that's just H1 X0 of NZ, that's dual to modular forms. And that duality will allow you to get at almost anything you want about modular forms. So it's shockingly simple to somehow get at modular forms from this point of view. You just take the free abelian group on P1 of Z mod NZ, you mod out by some relations, you get something isomorphic to M2 gamma 0 of N, and then that thing is dual to modular forms. Then using Pekka operators, you can recover a basis of modular forms, for example. And there's also it's somewhat recent, completely explicit description of how the Heck operators act directly on the quotient of the free abelian group on these symbols modulo the relations that you have. So you can do a huge amount of calculations simply in the free abelian group on the elements of P1 and Z mod NZ modulo some two-term and three-term relations that are completely explicit to write down. You can compute Heck operators directly on that object, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so let me prove this proposition. So there are two proofs of this. One is an inductive proof, and the other uses basic facts about continued fractions. So raise your right hand if you want the inductive proof, which you can understand every detail of, even if you've never heard of a continued fraction. And raise your left hand if you want the continued fraction proof. I think most people want continued fractions. So continued fractions it is. Both proofs are in the notes. And I read the continued fractions proof the first time myself in Cremona's book, and the inductive proof, some hints at it are in a paper of Mazur, Tate, and Teitelbaum on periodic analogs of the Virchow-Sorrentin direct conjecture. But they're both given here, and you can read both of them. So I'll tell you about the continued fraction proof. So here's what we have to do. I'm assuming you know all about continued fractions. And it won't fit in that little square, so I'll write something there and I'll erase this. So you have a modular symbol alpha beta in here. Okay, well, the general element of M2 gamma 0 of N is a finite linear combination of these. But if you can write every one of these as a linear combination of these special modular symbols, then you can certainly write every element of M2 gamma 0 of N in terms of these. Okay? So we can reduce to just considering symbols of this form. And you can write a symbol of this form as alpha 0 plus 0 beta, which you can in turn write as 0 beta, say, minus 0 alpha, just using the relations they've already had them to. And so it suffices to prove that every symbol of the form, say, 0 alpha, is a linear combination of symbols that you get from P1 of Z mod N Z, so symbols of this form right here. So we're just going to prove it for symbols of the form 0 alpha. So consider 0 alpha. What we want to prove is that this is a sum of images of 0 infinity under the action of elements of SL2Z. Because that's what these are, after all. Basically, these are images of 0 infinity. And I'm explaining to you why the images of 0 infinity under SL2Z give you everything. So it's not at all clear from the start that something 0 alpha should have anything to do with, you know, 0 infinity. If alpha, say if alpha were equal to infinity, it would be clear. But if alpha is just some, you know, random rational number, why should this be decomposable as a sum of other things that are images of 0 infinity under SL2Z? So there's, you know, since I wrote continued fractions on the board and you have one number sitting here, well, if alpha were infinity, we're done, because then it's sort of completely trivial. If alpha isn't infinity, consider its continued fraction expansion. So if alpha has a continued fraction and the continued fraction that gives a whole bunch of rational approximations to alpha, the best possible rational approximations with the numerator and denominator really small, you should of course imagine alpha as being some incredibly complicated rational number with, you know, millions of digits in its numerator and denominator, but it has some little continued fraction, and its continued fraction gives really good rational approximations to alpha. Really good, meaning the numerator and denominator are small. In particular, you just write down the list of good rational approximations, and I'll do that in the following way. So formally, I'm just going to include two things at the beginning, that I'll always include just because it makes the proof work out nicely, but then the actual rational approximations are the ones I'm writing down now. Oops. So here, I've written alpha as b divided by a. B is the numerator, alpha is the denominator. And these are the continued fraction convergence, the partial convergence to the to alpha. So this is, these are partial convergence. And the most basic thing you prove about the partial convergence to a continued fraction is that they satisfy this relation, bk times ak minus 1 minus bk minus 1 ak is minus 1 to the k minus 1. And if you want to see a proof of that, you can look at my elementary number 3 book, and it's the second page in the continued fractions chapter. So you really get it right at the beginning. Yes?
Do you want to switch your n's and your zeros in the definition there? Looks like your b0, a0 depends on m.
I don't. What do you mean switch my n's and my zeros?
Just by your definition. When you say B0 over A0, you're defining that to be.
So the first convergent to your continued fraction is an integer, and I'm just pointing out that fact by writing this. It's completely unnecessary to write this at all, actually. B0 over A0 is simply, by definition, the first convergent to the continued fraction. Oops, B1 over A1. The BIs are the numerators in the continued fraction, partial convergence, and the AIs are the denominators. Okay? And the first one is the integer part of alpha. And this is,
okay,
you know,
that makes sense.
Okay, thanks for your comment. Okay, so notice that this actually tells us that another way to think about this is the statement about comparing the numerators and denominators of successive convergence. It just says that the matrix GK, which is equal to BK, AK minus 1 to the K minus 1, BK minus 1, minus 1 to the K minus 1, AK minus 1, this determinant, it's a matrix of integer entries, and its determinant, since I threw in this extra minus 1 thing here, its determinant is 1, so this is an SL2Z. Because just take the determinant, you end up getting this, but with minus 1 to the k minus 1 thrown in, that exactly cancels out this minus 1 to the k minus 1. So in fact, if you write down the continued fraction expansion of a rational number, you've written down a sequence of elements of SL2Z. Ah! One more line. That's all it takes, fortunately. So now all you do is notice that 0, I profusely apologize for going over by 30 seconds, but this is 0 infinity plus infinity b0 plus b0 over 1 b1 over a1 plus da 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 plus bn minus 1 over an minus 1 bn over an. Because remember the relations, they say that if you go from here to here, et cetera, et cetera, this is equal to the path from 0 to bn over an. And here, I mean, I'm just writing down something that's just trivial from the homology relations. But each of these is what you get by applying the matrix GK I just wrote down to 0 infinity. And that proves the proposition. For example, notice that if you apply the matrix GK for the last ones to 0 infinity, then you're just going to get this quotient comma that quotient, and that gives you bn minus 1 over an minus 1 bn over a. Okay? And this is something you can actually use in practice. If you want to convert a modular symbol into a sum of symbols of this form, compute the continued fraction expansion of this, and then you just write down. You write down these the lower two entries of these matrices, and you get all these special modular symbols. So this is a sum of symbols of this form. Okay, so that finishes the proof of this trick of many. It tells you that every single modular symbol is a linear combination of images of 0 infinity under elements of SL2Z. And there are only finitely many such images. They correspond to the coset representatives of gamma 0 of n and SL2Z. Okay? And I'll tell you next time how to turn that into an algorithm to actually compute modular symbols, and I'll show you a bunch of examples on the computer.